Welcome to the Winning with Shopify podcast. This is the podcast to help you scale your Shopify store into a money-making machine. This episode is brought to you by Retention.com. Retention.com helps Shopify stores make more money by growing their email lists 20 times faster and sending 10 to 15 times more abandoned cart emails. Want to learn more? Check out Retention.com. Book a demo to get 2 times more audience credits for the first 60 days. Now, over to your host, Nick Truman.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Winning with Shopify podcast. For anyone who's not tuned in before, welcome to the show. It's an absolute pleasure to have you with us. My name's Nick. I've been running the show for nearly 3 years now. This is also our first show of the year, so apologies if I'm a little bit rusty. But we've had a nice nearly four-week break since we did our last episode. We've got some fantastic content for you today, though, so we'll come on to that in a second. January, we're going to be continuing this theme of retention with our partners at retention.com, and we're going to be talking a lot about how you guys can keep customers, how you can gain more customers. And most importantly, when we talk about retention, let's not beat around the bush. We're talking about making money from your customer base. Super important. Cost of a new customer is very expensive. So we want to make sure we get as much revenue as possible from them once they are in the door. Today, we've got something a little bit different, which we've done a few times before, and it's going to be quite exciting. We've got two guests, not one, but two. We've got Chris and Dan joining us. So Chris, I'm going to turn to you first. Welcome to the show.
Nick, great to be with you.
Great stuff. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here. Chris, you were the CEO of Purple Mattress for many years, a big online store, obviously selling mattresses, clues in the name. Tell us about your background and your time there.
Yeah, I was the first chief marketing officer there, and I was tasked with the launch of Purple Mattress in 2015, 2016 timeframe when we started rolling it out. And so I came to Purple when Purple didn't exist. There was just two founders who had an idea. They needed a brand. They needed a launch campaign. They needed everything, right? There was nothing that existed. There was no website. There was nothing that was there. And so we had to go to work on, and we can talk in as much detail as you want on this, Nick, but we had to go to work on putting together a launch campaign and launch strategy for Purple, which turned out to be like kind of a case study in launches in terms of how to go and do it. So I started there as kind of the first person. I need a lot of help. Dan and I had worked together before. Dan was running a content marketing agency at the time. He and I had been co-workers at SEO.com, which was a big SEO agency.
Nice. Yeah,
nice. And so I brought Dan in and he helped with the launch on that too and ultimately ended up joining the company. But yeah, it actually started with an idea that Dan had, which was, let's do a Kickstarter. Right, which I knew nothing about, and we went and did a Kickstarter, and the founders were like, "Yeah, if you can sell 200 mattresses on a Kickstarter, then we'll fund." You know, it was about $1 million that I was asking for to go do the launch, to go do the launch campaign, and they're like, "Look, if we can sell 200 mattresses and prove that we can sell 200 mattresses, you know, then we'll fund it." And I think we ended up selling about 300 between Kickstarter and some of the other platforms like Kickstarter that we ended up pushing the mattress to. And then ultimately launched around January 15th, 2016, and it was a really explosive launch. So
nice. We're definitely going to dig more into that. And
yeah,
I said before we hit record, I love hearing about this stuff on the podcast. And didn't know you guys were at SEO.com, which is awesome. So I was a little fanboy when I first started in the industry about 15 years ago. So good to hear.
That's a whole other like adventure that we did. So...
We could definitely talk about that on another show, I'm sure. Finally, Dan, let's introduce you as well. So, Dan, welcome to the show. Pleasure to have you with us.
No, it's great. It's great to be here. First of the year, trying to warm up the voice, get back into the groove after the holidays, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And Dan, you were obviously head of growth at Purple Mattress. So, obviously, Chris has mentioned a bit. Is there anything Chris has missed out in terms of background, how you got involved in the first place?
Yeah, I'll tell you right off the bat, kind of give the end of the story first, is the first year we did over $60 million in that first year of business.
Wow.
The Purple Mattress went public in just a couple years. So it was very fast. There was fast growth. There was a lot of things learned with, you know, how you scale spend to grow, how you go into new channels quickly, and what things break when you grow that fast too. We can talk about all that stuff if you want to.
Yeah.
So a lot of good and bad that happened in that time frame, but it's quite exciting. So I started out as a sports journalist. I was a journalist. Then I went over to SEO.com and did some crappy content for links, you know, and then
back in the day, the old black hat days.
Got into paid media, and what I like about it is I know we can spend a spend a dollar and make $3 or $4, and we can do that all the time. And that's kind of the nutshell version of going from sports writing into paid media. So yeah, we spent $300 million or so, you know, at Purple on ad spend over the time. Now we've had, during that time, we had people come to us and ask us how we did it, and they wanted help. So Chris and I joined each other again and are doing this for their businesses right now. So all kinds of, mostly e-commerce, almost all e-commerce businesses. So, and things have changed today from when we launched Purple in 2016, 2015, 2016. Mm-hmm. It's a very different environment now. We'd probably do it very different today if we launched that company.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, even in the last 12 months, having all the changes of stuff like GA4 coming out and Performance Max campaign, yeah. Smart Shopping died, which, you know, we're still throwing whiskey on the fire over that one. That's, a very sorry loss, unfortunately. I guess a big question to start off with for either or both of you is, what are some of the, we'll talk about the principles first and then get into some of the details and the what went wrong, the things that didn't work, because I think that's quite exciting. But how do you grow a direct-to-consumer brand? Like, what are some of the key things that you're like, you can't do it without this, and these are some of the things you need to get started?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think too, especially for your audience, because Nick, I think I understand that you have a lot of your audiences, people who are just starting out with Shopify, they're utilizing Shopify, which is an awesome platform, mm-hmm. and they're utilizing it to start an e-commerce business. We did the same thing at Purple, right? I mean, I think there was actually a point, Dan, where we were Shopify's largest customer. Isn't that right?
Yeah, there's a point there.
Wow.
At least that's what they told us. You know?
Yeah, I think, yeah, they might have just been being nice to us, but we were on the Shopify platform well into a couple $100 million in revenue. And it was like, when we started out, we were like, what should we do? I guess we'll just try Shopify, right? You know, even at the time, which was like 2015, 2016, when we built that store, Shopify was still really robust for us, right? To be able to build on top of. And today it's even more so, right? So we just did a launch with another client that was on Shopify, and it made the launch like way easier being on Shopify. And so we are always big advocates. Whenever someone shows up in our world, they're like, hey, what should I do? I have this idea. I want to go start it. We're like, number one, you need a Shopify store. So just because it's so easy to plug into. So you think about that with your own business, just for your listeners, you're like, hey, I got this really cool idea and I just set up a Shopify store. That was Purple like 7 years ago, you know, hey, we have this cool idea. We should launch, you know, set up a Shopify store. But the thing that was really important was all of the marketing that went into the effort, right? And there were things that we did that we had a lot of money to go do. We built a really nice video campaign that we launched with. It was a long form video campaign, called the Goldilocks campaign, which is, you know, kind of a famous case study now in video marketing for paid ads, especially. And we spent a lot of money on that, right? And we spent a lot of money on the spend, and we spent a lot of money on the actual production as well. But there was a lot of other things that we did, I think especially from a guerrilla marketing bootstrapping type of perspective that anybody can do, right? It's like, we had our Amazon ducks in a row, right? Like, we had an Amazon store set up. We knew that people would leave Purple. They would go over to Amazon and they would buy there. They would prefer to buy there. And so we wanted to make sure that we had all of that figured out. We had a lot of reviews. We had all of our Kickstarter guys, and we said, hey, we need reviews on the mattress. And I think nice. We even bribed them with a free pillow. Like, we'll send you a free pillow if you write a review.
Yeah.
Right? We went out to a bunch of the review sites. So in the mattress space, the review sites were kind of getting big, and we went to them and said, hey, we want to take and create a video that is, you guys do it, and it's Purple versus Casper. Casper was our main competitor, right? And let's go do a Purple versus Casper video, and then we'll set up an affiliate deal with you guys so that when people come in and watch your Casper versus Purple video and you guys send traffic over to us and people buy, you know, you guys will get a commission for that on the back end, right?
So early stage affiliate marketing.
Yeah. I mean, we were even doing things then that were, people weren't calling it in 2016. They weren't calling it influencer marketing, but we were doing influencer marketing where we were going out and we're like, hey, let's find some people with some really big followings and let's give them mattresses. Let's have them write reviews on it and have them push it to their own audiences, right? Today, we would do a lot more with that because of the way the market has evolved. We would take that content, we would turn it into ads. We would run ad spend against those influencer type videos, which is super effective in today's world, right? But those are just kind of from almost a no cost perspective of like, what can I do to grow my business? It's like, you know, do deals, right? Like, make sure you got your Amazon ducks in a row. You know, give people things to give you reviews, right? I mean, there's a lot of just kind of things you can do that are very, very low cost, especially if you're on a budget. There's a lot of things you can do to really grow that business. So,
and the foundational stuff that Chris is talking about, People that know the story of Purple and even our launch, everybody thought it was the video, kind of the viral video. But if that viral video was launched, what is the customer journey afterward? They see the video, they go look at Purple mattress reviews. That's like the number one search, right? Is brand reviews after they get aware of a brand. And then we're listed. We have Amazon reviews. You have the comparison, the versus affiliate articles that are on there. And if we were not there, I guarantee that the growth would have been stunted quite a bit. You can't just live on just a viral expensive video. You have to have each part of the funnel really set to win.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest challenges a lot of brands have, and it's good that you're giving a low cost model for marketing whilst actually hitting lots of things, because a lot of brands struggle with the multi-channel side of things. It's like, we get it with clients all the time where they're like, I'm not paying Trustpilot or Yotpo, they're too expensive. I've got FIFO or Reviews.io, one of the cheaper ones. The problem being is that Trustpilot appears above FIFO on Google. And as you've just said, the first thing they go to look at is they go to look at your reviews. And there's an element actually of like, you need to be, as you say, you've got Amazon, you've got your review platform, you've maybe something on the website, create a page in your site called Our Brand Reviews and list everything in there. Just have widgets all over it going like, here's how people review us on Google, and here's the one on Amazon, here's the one on eBay. And, you know, we had a client that was eBay seller of the year of their product in the UK for 1 year. And for the next 5 years afterwards, we were telling them constantly, put a badge on the website and link it to the award on eBay's website. And we did that, and conversion went up from 0.6 to 0.8%. So our conversion rate increased quite nicely overnight. No additional ad spend. It just generated more revenue, which is brilliant. I mean, the video is certainly exciting. And I love the fact that you thought about, okay, watching the video, what do I do next? Where do we need to be, basically? If people don't have a good budget to do like a viral video, one option you've mentioned that I think is quite exciting though is getting influencers to do it for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually, this is the really good news for your audience, right? Mm. And it could be people who are just starting up with a Shopify store, but it could also be those of you out there that are marketing managers or growth managers inside of a company, and you're trying to figure out how to grow the digital media side, or I should say the ad side to grow a business. Say you're trying to break 10 million or 20 million. We work with a lot of companies in like that $50 to $100 million range. There seems to be some type of like sound barrier of $50 million where companies are like, we can't figure out how to break 50 million, right? And the thing that we talk about frequently, and this is the good news for your listeners, right, is that you don't have to go out and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on a long form video today to be able to promote your product. The thing that works the best, it's not really a secret sauce, but it's something that we do really well inside of our own agency, is we're really good at finding content creators, video creators that are, and these are different than influencers. Influencers are kind of hard to work with because they're expensive. You typically have constraints on what you can do with their video content. Like a lot of them won't let you run it in paid spend. You have like time limits you can run it on. They have like, maybe they have a million people that follow them. Well, you're going to burn down that million people really quickly in the promotion, you know, right? So there's all these kind of issues with these influencers where our philosophy is like, hey, let's go spend a little bit of money. And when I say a little bit, I'm talking about less than $500 usually, like maybe averaging around, you know, $200, where it's like, we can find someone who's really good at taking their iPhone, holding the product up, talking about the product's benefits and why they're great. And they produce a video that we can take then and we can turn into a direct response ad that we can then go run in platforms like Facebook or TikTok or those types of places. And so that's awesome, because like, we have people who show up in our world who are like, do I got to go spend like $300,000 on a video? We're like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. We're like, hey, let's just get, let's just get 10 really good content creators who are awesome at like, you know, pitching your product. And then let's take that video. We'll create a bunch of different videos out of it. And we'll go run that in Facebook, Instagram, wherever. And let's just start testing, right? Let's just start testing and see what drives conversion, right? And so that's another like thing that about the world that we live in today that's really amazing, especially if you're like a one-person shop and you just open up a Shopify store, you can be that person. You hold it up, talk about your product, talk about the, you know, the benefits of it, and give people an offer, and you can start running ads against that tomorrow, and you'll start to see traffic come in, right? So there's so many cool things that you can do like that are inexpensive. And I mean, we do these inexpensive campaigns with really big companies too, where they're like, oh, we don't have to spend like hardly any money on this. No, let's just go do some really cool user generated content that where they're talking about your product. and let's just go run that in ad spend and see what we can do. And everybody loves it. Everybody loves it, except the brand people. Brand people don't like it because it's not branded content. But branded content doesn't work that well in paid platforms, honestly.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I saw the most amazing video campaign recently where it was for a sofa in the UK. And it's a really small company, but they're growing nicely. And they're trying to make their sofas have personality. So their whole thing is, we're putting another family member in your lounge. And it's the sofa. It's got a personality. It's bright color. It looks cool. So I mean, you guys are laughing. It's fun. It's a good little gimmick.
Yeah.
So what they do is they get customers to send in videos just on their iPhone, on selfie mode, video of them. And the video always has to be them falling on the sofa and explaining what they can feel when they fall on the sofa. And then their advertising campaign is literally called like the adoption agency. And it's like, this is Kevin. Kevin's recently adopted a new, you know, one of our sofas. And here's Kevin enjoying his sofa. And it's just him falling backwards onto the sofa, laughing about it and going, there's like a real spring. Like I had a second fall afterwards. It's like, and it's really fun. And that's their Facebook advert. And it's so different and it catches people unawares. And, you know, then on Facebook, you put the targeting as people that are moving house, people that have recently Googled the word sofa, people that have been on furniture company sites, people that have, you know, mentioned something to do with Netflix and, you know, movie marathons, Harry Potter, all this sort of stuff. So it's really, really smart, but it's also very simple. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah. That sounds like a great campaign. I mean, it's exactly what works too. It's easy.
Yeah, the psychological reason it probably works. People are having ad fatigue, and they are tired of brands telling them about the brand, and they don't trust the brand. It's much more powerful to have a customer tell the brand story than the brand tell their own story right now, especially on social media.
Yeah.
And it's so much cheaper. And we have a really successful client. And they're just having their employees and their employees' significant others putting content out there. Like our best ad is the husband of one of the employees. And we just keep going back to this guy. And they're just doing an iPhone video and we're cutting it up into different ads. And it's what worked. Like, this is a big thing. If what worked in 2016, we would do it very different today just because of this fact today.
No, it's absolutely amazing. And I think one of the other stories that springs to mind when you've just said that actually is there was a company you worked with that sell a certain type of shoes. So if you've got a bad back, these shoes are really good for helping the way your spine, the way you walk. And that's it. They've got sort of different pressure plating bits. And they noticed that their receptionist, she was sitting there one day moaning about her back and kind of moving around a little bit. And they said, why don't you try the shoes? And the next thing, I bought a local newspaper and opened it. And about 6 or 7 pages in, there's an article about this woman who's got these shoes and they've genuinely helped and changed her back. I was like, that's our client. That's their receptionist. I know her. And it was like, but they'd literally given out to a PR consultant who had got it into the press, into the local press. And we literally just ran a picture of that article on Facebook, just paying for Facebook clicks here, and her story being given to a PR consultant. The whole operation cost less than £5,000, you know, $6,000. And we'd had so much activity off it. And now it runs our Facebook ads. And for about 6 months, it was the only thing driving people into the site and getting them to convert, which gave us 6 months of revenue coming in to start building up Google Ads campaigns, getting the SEO to where it needed to be and working on email and creating a personality for the brand, all the other bits that we needed to do. It bought us some time. It was absolutely amazing. And I think this is the other point to make and the next question to ask you guys is, you mentioned about the brand guys and they don't like this kind of cheap, short, sharp video because it's not a branding thing. It's an interesting thing to mention because a lot of owners of Shopify stores or any business get very precious. And they say, you know, I looked up Purple Mattress before this call and, you know, it's an amazing type of technology. And part of the sell of the mattress is the technology itself, the actual product. And they can get quite precious. So how do you overcome some of those barriers where people say, this is not our vision, but you're like, but look at the money. Look how people are buying this now. This company exists for the customers, you know?
We usually do it this way, especially if we're getting resistance from the brand people. We'll show them case studies of other clients and say, look, hey, let's show you what worked here. Here's the content. Here's the branded content. Here's the like UGC type content. Here's the metrics. Here's what worked. Here's what didn't work in this campaign. And we just try and get them to a spot where they're just agreeable that we can at least make it. And we're not telling them not to make their stuff. We're like, you just keep making your stuff. Go ahead. We just want to get you in a spot where you are agreeable to us making some of this type of user-generated content for you. And then we would like to test it in platform and see how it performs versus the other content, right?
Yeah.
And almost without exception, it works better, right? So then what happens is the conversation becomes much broader than the creative team's pushback on this type of content. Because here at the ultimately end of the day, it's like, hey, we got to make money and we got to do it at an efficient rate, right? And so when the growth team or the media buyers or whoever it is that's working on it, that's outside of the brand guys, right? The brand people see that happening, then it really drives the conversation internally. It's like, hey, this is actually making us a lot of money, right? We have to keep doing this. And usually the brand people have to relent at that point. Now we've had some brand people that will just continue to hate. We have others that go, hey, this is actually pretty cool. You know, we actually really like this a lot. So the reaction is mixed across the board, but the brand people will always be very protective, of course, of the brand. And then they're really protective of their creative, right? So we have to be really careful not to insult their creative if it's not performing, you know?
Yeah.
We have to be like really careful about that, honestly, because it's their baby, right?
Especially when you look at the numbers. It's always the worst thing is you look at the numbers and you're like, it's not working and we need to break that to them and we need
right.
to do it
soon. We're like, we'll usually tell them like, hey, the production value is amazing. It's really nice. Like you guys did a really good job on this video. What we're seeing is just not great though in the performance side, right? That's different. So let's talk about that. And then, you know, so, and a lot of times that content can be used in other places, connected television. I'm not sure like in Europe what that looks like, but in the United States, connected television is massive now, right? It's becoming
this
huge channel, Hulu and all these. Yeah. And it's like produced content works extremely well in that channel, right? I mean, that's the kind of content we want for that channel. So it's not like it doesn't have a place or a channel that it can work in. But in paid media, especially right now, UGC is king. It just is.
I'd probably add a mindset people need to have. This is business owners. This is marketers in general. Is you have to have an element of a lot of humility.
Yeah.
You can't come in this thinking my way is going to work. I have a bias of the way I want this to work. You have to let the customers decide and let the data decide. We approach it like we don't care. We don't care if an ad is pretty or not pretty. We just care about making money. Mm. And to us, like a good brand sells well. If it's a good brand, it's going to sell. Doesn't mean necessarily putting naked pictures on your ads. I mean, but it's like we've had many clients actually that do not want to run an ad that works. And it's baffling. Blows our minds. Right? we've had a client this year. We don't work with them anymore. And it's partly because we had an ad that was getting about a 200% increase in sales. Mm. And he did not want to run the ad. Right, he wanted to run the ad that was getting no return.
Yep,
and it's like you cannot grow a business if you want to put money towards ads that don't make money, and people do get stuck in that. It's super weird, but they do, and it's like you have to approach it with a humbleness, and us too. It's like we have these ideas, but you have to change when you see the data work.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a phrase that used to get waved around a lot, but I think it's coming back into fashion as far as I'm concerned, and that's customer first. And that means that you, as you say, you look at the data and go, well, this advert sells, that one doesn't. So we get rid of the one that doesn't, or we run it, but it's just part of the DNA, the family, the branding of this thing. It's not the driver anymore. I mean, we've had so many clients where, for example, we had one recently that on Performance Max, on Google Ads, it makes a video for you if you don't give it one. And even if you give it one, it will still probably make a load of videos for you. This is the way the tech works. And they came back and said, you can't run this anymore. It devalues our brand. And we were like, you might be right, but do you know how bad things are going to be on standard shopping versus Performance Max? And they didn't believe us. So we turned it off. We also, the other bit of context, we were 4 weeks from Black Friday here. Like we didn't, we just wanted to be turning that tap up. Like we're making good profit right now. We want to get back to break even by increasing cost as much as we can. So we're break even and we're not making any profit. Because when we hit Black Friday, the bigger our audience is now that we're hitting, the bigger it's going to be over Black Friday. Like, and it was just this moment of like, I think my exact email was to the effect of like, are you free in an hour? I will get in the car. Because like, the other thing is, I mean, you guys are the same boat as me as well. Is my company, we charge a percentage of spend in a lot of scenarios or a performance based fee. So if they stop spending or they make less profit, it hits all of us. And that's the boat we're in. And so actually, you know, when you talk about humility and coming into this together and having an agreed, it's customer first, it's so important. And it's so important. And we try to do that in our onboarding now to get people on board with that. But I love what both of you have just said. I think, as you say, it's you've got to be really careful to keep people on the side. You know, there are humans working on these things, but it's got to be coupled with the data. And the data, I'm tempted to even not say the data doesn't lie just because of what our politicians do with data these days. But I think the crux of it is, you know, we all exist for our customers. And as soon as we start existing for ourselves, not our customers, we're no longer existing for either of them, really. Because otherwise the business isn't going to grow. But it sounds like at Purple Mattress, you guys were so heavy and really clear on, like, if it makes money, we put more money behind it. We get behind that. That is how we're going to grow this business, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it was really heavy on testing too. And it's funny because I think our first awakening to this was really early on, where we had produced this really expensive video. And then I was sitting there and I was like, I wonder if we made like, if we had like a $10,000 budget and we made like five videos that were cheaper videos, how would those perform against like a really expensive production, right? Like, so we went out, we made five videos, and one of them, I was like, I thought it was so bad, I almost didn't green light. I was like, yeah, about that, right? But it's like that video that cost $2,500 probably drove tens of millions of dollars in revenue for Purple. Wow. One $2,500 video.
Well, that video you're talking about had, in a couple of years, had 40 million views on YouTube and was the best direct return of ad spend video on YouTube. So
it was a $2,500 video.
And on YouTube, that's amazing. Just because a lot of our audience, you won't have used YouTube before. YouTube is a really tough channel just to get a direct ROI.
Yeah.
Performance Max is helping. It's all in the mix, but you just put a video on there, it's very difficult to make any sales from it. Even when we put, you know, $200,000 behind something, you sometimes look at the stats and you're like, how are we going to tell the client this? Like, and it's, but that's the point of the multi-channel, that these people are now going on Google. What's brand search doing at the moment? Are we seeing an increase in traffic on our review platforms? Going back to exactly what you were saying earlier, Dan, I think it's so key.
On YouTube, if you want to talk about that real quick.
Yeah.
Just a couple things on YouTube. It is tough because it's, Google doesn't show attribution of sales very well on YouTube. Most of those sales get sucked into Google search and display. And so it's hard to look at it. You got to look at it a little more like TV on the prospecting side of YouTube. But what we figured out with the mattress side was, if we broke even on a prospecting ad, we got a one-to-one return on YouTube, then we could scale that all day because everything else lifted.
Yeah.
And YouTube is still a massive channel. Like, it is probably the most underused channel, I think, on even a performance channel. Just because people have a hard time figuring out how to do it right. Well, one metric we look at, there's something called earned video views. So it means they watch your ad, then they click to your channel to watch more videos. That would be an earned video view.
Yep.
That's a metric I like to look at a lot, as if that video is working. But if you get an earned video view, that means you got to have some organic stuff in your video channel to keep them engaged. So it does have to be kind of a holistic idea, and you got to go after it from multiple angles. You got to have customer service and people responding to comments. But you can still get really cheap video views on YouTube. And if you think of like a 30-second video on YouTube compared to a 3-second Facebook video view, when they charge you 3 seconds of Facebook versus 30 on YouTube, that's like the most valuable brand impression you can get. You can get your whole story there in 30 seconds. It's just the data is a little tricky to figure that one out.
Yeah, it is. The YouTube analytics isn't the most friendly thing. But I think one thing just to clarify for anyone listening who's like, I don't understand these numbers. A one-to-one ROI is, if you've spent $1,000 on that video, you've made $1,000 in sales. So you've also got to take into the fact that the business has running costs and the product has cost something as well, which hasn't come out of that one-to-one. So you've made a direct loss from what the report's telling you. But as you've said very well, Dan, it's that there's other channels contributing it. It's a brand awareness channel. And as you say, it's hard to attribute things back. I've been trying to queue up someone for an attribution session for nearly a year now. We're still not there because no one wants to touch it. It is a nightmare. But I think the other channel that you often see the revenue coming through as well is, certainly on Google Analytics, is direct. You see so much revenue in direct, and it's like, right, we've upped all our budgets and direct's gone up. And they say, what's contributed to that? And you're like, everything. And they're like, I want more specifics. It's like, you can't have them. It's just the magic of marketing. It's, we're telling people we exist and they're buying products. So.
Or they think, we don't need to do any spend. We're just getting a bunch of direct. It's like, what do you think is coming from? You know?
Absolutely.
That conversation happens over and over. It's insane.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's some principles in our world that will never change. But I think YouTube's definitely an untapped market. And to give people an idea of cost as well, 2 or 3 years ago, we were running a lot more videos than we're running now, purely because of our client base, nothing else. Just we got different clients. Video's not as important on YouTube. But we were literally getting views at 1 cent per view. So that's a scent for somebody to spend at least 5 seconds hearing about your business, which is quite cool. It's gone up a little bit now, but it's still, as you say, it's super cheap and people haven't tapped into it. And you're absolutely right on the Facebook versus YouTube. I'd never quite thought about it like that, but it is absolutely true. Getting that extra it's shop window space, isn't it? It's having a billboard in front of somebody that they're watching, which is cool. Cool. So let's come on to our final topic then. We're half an hour in. Final thing to talk about. And this is going to be my favorite one, I think. And I'm happy to share some as well if you guys do. But mistakes you've made, things that went wrong, stuff you were like, right, let's do this. And it just didn't work. Just to save our audience the trouble of even trying if it's not going to be right for them either.
God, let's see. Dan, you got one right off the top of your head?
I mean, there's mistakes, I think, from a business standpoint of if you grow too fast, like there's some definite mistakes can happen. We grew too fast, which means we didn't have people in the call center. We were also talking, Nick, earlier about maybe some other types of advertising. We did a lot of magazine advertising too, where you have to have a phone number on there. We put a phone number on there, and over the weekend we had probably 1,000 calls. Wow. We had nobody staffed over the weekend to take those calls.
Yep.
So we lost a lot of sales in that advertising because of that. That you have to be prepared for some growth that way. You can't just put a bunch of money in there. We've had a bunch of clients too. We had a really sad story right around COVID where they didn't have enough customer service and they were not responding to social comments. And that really, it torched that business. They started getting bad business reviews. They started just because people were not responding. And that business that actually went out of business. And that's the reason why, is because they did not have enough customer service people to handle the phones and to respond to comments.
I think things like that are always a challenge. And I mean, we've done so many episodes before with platforms like Gorgeous have been on the show, talking about customer service and how important it is to reply to people. And also how easy it can be now as well. So you've given a very traditional view of it, which is great. And that is where, and let's face it, it's where most customers want. They want to be able to pick up the phone and someone says, you know, in the same country that you're phoning from, someone says, hey, I understand your problem. This is what I'm going to do to fix it. That's great. But equally, there are platforms out there, if that's just not sustainable for your business right now, there are platforms out there like Gorgeous that can automatically reply. It can suggest replies. And the other thing we always talk about from an SEO perspective, probably more than anything, is content. You know, you getting content from those customer service interactions so they don't phone in the first place. You know, the content's on site, your FAQs, your, this is a bit of an interesting product, though I trust it, I've read the reviews, but I want to know more about it. How big is it? What color is it? Where's it going to go in my house? All this sort of stuff. So actually building content off the back of that to reduce things. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. And there was one instance where a friend of mine's running an IT company. And I will name and shame not the IT company because they did a fantastic job, but I'll name and shame the company, the client they're working with, that was Apple. When Apple launched Apple Maps, you guys remember the carnage, the amount of cars that were lost on the roads over the world because Apple Maps wasn't ready and they'd launched it. So for the UK department, Apple decided we're going to launch a customer service department you can phone if you're having problems with Apple Maps just to complain about it because this is a nightmare. And a friend of mine ran the IT company that got the phone call and said, we need a call center and we need it now. And they got them set up in a week, but there was like 2,000 people they literally just chucked in a call center in the UK to answer phone calls about Apple Maps. To put it in perspective, I think there's one level of the more you can influence your customers to communicate in a cost efficient way for you, the better. But equally, you've got to, if something's gone completely wrong, you've got to be there. When they comment on your social platform, when they pick up the phone, when they send an email, you've got to be there. You've got to reply immediately. There's no alternative.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, and it's the other thing too is I think you asked at the beginning of the podcast where we talked about maybe, and this plays into this as well. It's like, what's some of the older school channels that are like really effective, right?
Yeah.
Are, you know, kind of along these lines, our big thing that we advocate, especially with a higher price point product, is you got to put your phone number on your website. Mm. Like people have to be able to reach you, right? So if you're selling, like we've had clients that have $2,500, $5,000 type products and we're like, and they don't have a phone number up on the website. And I'm like, hey, look, people are going to have, and especially some of the demographics that they were selling to, older demographics, higher price products. I'm like, they want to know about financing. They want to know about returns and warranties and what if this breaks and all this. And they want to know you're a real company. They want to talk to somebody frequently before they hit the buy button, or they want to get on the phone with you and actually do it that way, right? So that kind of comes in line with just being responsive and social, just in the commenting and all those types of things. That's difficult to do, but you know, this story that Dan just told about this company that wasn't staying on top of that, had a lot of customer service issues. Like, we sat there and we were right in the middle of it, watching it completely implode. It was one of the saddest things I've ever seen, honestly. And it just, it wrecked that company, right? So there's a lot of things that you can do just by being highly communicative with your clients, right? Like phone numbers, returning response on email, commenting, and making sure your customer service is on top of their game 100% of the time. Like, that's all super important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's sort of two sides to it, isn't there? There's the side of something's gone wrong and we need to fix it now. And there's also, as you've just outlined as well, there's the sales side. You know, if someone wants to ask a question, they also, if they're asking a question, it's not because they've just seen an advert for the first time and they've heard about it. They're down that buying funnel now and they're ready to purchase. And it's like, if the answer to this is correct and it works for me, if this is the right type of chair, I'm buying it and it's going to be in my house as soon as possible. So like, what you don't want to do is do, we've spoken a lot about marketing and acquiring customers and how to keep them engaged. You don't want to get all the way down that funnel, that expensive funnel. You've paid loads of money to get them there and then you lose them because your biggest competitor they weren't even thinking about answers the phone. Like, it's that simple. You don't want to lose them at that point.
Absolutely.
This goes back to our foundational conversation at the beginning of, you have to have that piece of it down. Going to ad spend, with the algorithms, you know, the Facebook algorithm, the Google algorithm, they're pretty smart, but they also need more data to work.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of mistakes of people. They actually don't spend enough. They want to like dip their toes in the water and see how warm it is first. And then, you know, what that does is you slowly bleed to death because you're never able to get enough data into the platform. You're never able to get enough data for Facebook to learn and for you to learn what creative works. It just takes too long. And so you never make those channels work. And right now it's like, you gotta spend, you know, probably if you're going into Facebook, you probably need to spend $30,000 a month, okay. I think, to start getting enough data in there.
$1,000 a day, at least $1,000 a day.
Probably minimum right now. And you know, it, for some people that might be scary for them, but you're also going to make money off of that and you're going to get that learning quicker. And they just, if you do it too slow, you never learn, you never make it work and you'll stop because it won't produce for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned that. We literally had a case study earlier this week from a client where we've got three different levels of budget with them. When they put it down to a low budget, which we did over Christmas because they couldn't fulfill orders until the new year, that's a whole nother podcast episode where all us marketing team are absolutely furious. But they couldn't do that. So we lowered the spend down. So we were still there, but we couldn't fulfill any orders. So you could order from them and it'll be 2.5 weeks at its absolute extent before the product arrives. And it's, you're talking like the postman can deliver this thing. It's tiny. So yeah, we've got one level of spend that's that. And if we put it at that, we make a 1-to-1 ROI. No profit. We're not even covering our costs. It's a loss and it's awful. Then we've got a second budget. And if we spend that, we get about 2, maybe 2.5 to 1. Same campaign. We're literally just turning up the campaigns. So you get to this sort of second budget, 2.5 to 1. Then we have this bigger budget that the investors basically said to us for a month. So, and this is part of the story, going back to what you were saying earlier, Chris, about getting the branding teams on board. We tried to work. We kept kind of with this client peeling back the onion until we worked out who's the person we need to talk to. And the investors were like, all right, here you go. Here's a massive budget, which is third level of budget. Go and spend that and see what happens. And now on Facebook and on Google, we were just always on. We were always on. Our ROI across the board was more like 9-to-1. So then we lowered it to the second one and it goes down sort of 2.5. Everyone's getting a bit nervous. Well, we're not spending more if it's that. So eventually we said, can we pump it up to level 3 again? So we did. Always on. We made another 9-to-1. And it's like, So they now are just saying like, your job is to spend as much as you can, which is brilliant. And it sounds great, but it's because we, going back to what we were talking about earlier, the data doesn't lie. When we're up there, we are everywhere. And as soon as we start pulling, you guys talk about watching the business bleed to death, choking it. As soon as we start trying to cut costs and go, well, Facebook's not doing well enough now, let's pull the budget back. Google stops working because Google is relying on the data from the website. And a lot of that's driven by Facebook.
Yeah.
So you stop Facebook, Google's now being choked because it doesn't have any data to work with to find more customers on its lookalike audiences. And the whole thing just grinds to a halt. The flip side of all of this though, is a lot of people listening going, all right, guys, I hear what you're saying. I don't have $30,000. There are other ways to do this. Like, you can make a profit on a small budget. And a lot of us, we do have to start there, unfortunately. But I guess the moral of the story is, if you're getting some investment, know which channels you're going to chuck it on, all of them, and absolutely go for it and see what happens. But that's, going back to what you were saying, Chris, that's why we like to test. That's what a test is. You know, do it for a week and see what happens.
That's right.
See what impact it has. And it worked. Now let's try it for 2 weeks. Now let's try it for three. And now we're always on.
Make cheap video and test it. And monitor your conversion too, like your conversion rate on your site, and really trying to understand what's going on with the conversion rate. We're big fans of Audit, which is a service that you can go to, they'll audit your website for conversion. They give you really good suggestions back on things that you can do to increase your conversion rate optimization on your website. It's a really cool service. Just all those things working in conjunction together will have a dramatic effect on your ability to be able to generate revenue.
Nice. We'll bring it to a close there. But chaps, I really, really, really appreciate your time today. It's been absolutely brilliant having you on the show. So thank you very much.
Good conversation, Nick.
It's been great. We really appreciate it. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.
Lovely stuff. And for everybody else listening, as always, back again next week. I hope you've enjoyed today. If you want to reach out to these guys, Chris, do you want to just give us your website and everything quickly if they want some help, some support, where to find you?
Yeah, sure. Our company is called Stoic Yeti. And so you can visit us at stoicyeti.com, which is S-T-O-I-C Yeti, Y-E-T-I.com. And there's a contact page on there. And you can reach us through the contact page really easily. We'll get back to you quickly.
Amazing. Well, thank you. And like we're saying, customer service, got to get back quickly. So thanks so much, chaps. Really appreciate your time today. And for everybody else listening, back again next week. Thanks for joining us. And if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button and leave us a little review. So thank you very much. See you again soon.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. You can subscribe to our weekly newsletter for exclusive offers at winningwithshopify.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook group by searching for Winning with Shopify on Facebook. Over and out.